Judy, first of all, thank you so much for agreeing to be interviewed for this. And if you could just say your full name and maybe spell it too.
Judith, J-U-D-I-T-H, excuse me, A, middle initial is A, last name is a hyphenated name, Strauss Clement, S-T-R-A-U, S as in Sam, Z as in zebra, hyphen, Clement, C-L-E-M-E-N-T.
Thank you very much. Are you lay or clergy?
I am clergy. I am a Presbyterian clergywoman.
Thank you very much. And Judy, when and where were you born?
I was born in Yakima, Washington, in 1940.
Oh, okay. So you're back in Washington again. And where did you go to school, graduate or divinity school?
I went to Washington State University in Pullman as an undergraduate, and I got my MDiv from United Theological Seminary in the Twin Cities.
Okay, great. And what work or ministry were you doing at the time of reimagining?
I was newly married to John. I had just finished being an inner city pastor in Minneapolis, and was living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and looking for a job as an interim pastor. I did have a job with Mount Chestnut Presbyterian Church in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Wonderful. Thank you. And what work or ministry did you do after reimagining?
I continued to be an interim ministry specialist.
And was that always in the Pennsylvania, that area still?
No, I had that church. I was in Silver Spring in Pennsylvania, and then I came to Milwaukee. I had another interim there, and my largest church was in Geneva, Illinois, a 700-member church. I was the senior pastor, head of staff, and then I was there for a couple years, and then I went on. My last congregation was in Wilmette, Illinois, which is the North Shore of Chicago. I was there for a couple years, and then I retired.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That's you've been several different places. That's great. Judy, do you remember how and when you first became aware of feminist theology?
As a matter of fact, I do. I had started seminary, and I think one of the first or second days, one of the professors decided that he would read, I don't remember the passage of scripture, but he changed all of the male pronouns to female pronouns, and he read the text with all female pronouns. And I thought, whew, isn't that interesting? I've never even thought of that before. So that first experience with it.
Interesting. So your first reaction was kind of, this is interesting. I mean, it wasn't negative. It was sort of just...
Oh, never.
Yeah, Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, you can point to a specific moment. That's pretty interesting. That's great. And then I assume your knowledge and interest in it kind of grew during your seminary period?
Wait a minute. I didn't understand that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I assume your knowledge of an interest in feminist theology grew during your seminary time.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
Good. Well, if we could move to reimagining, could you talk about what led to your initial involvement in reimagining?
I was a member of the Twin Cities Area Presbytery, and the executive, which was Bob Lucas, asked me to specifically be the delegate, delegate from the Twin Cities Area Presbytery to this group who was planning this ecumenical conference. And so it was the ecumenical decade, churches in solidarity with women. And Sally Hill from the Twin Cities Metropolitan Church Commission, and she's deceased now, but she was gathering a group, and I was asked to be the presbytery representative to them.
So you were kind of in at the ground floor there. Could you talk about some of your memories you might have? I know it's been a long time, but what that process was like and how it evolved into the Reimagining Conference?
I think the biggest one, and I'm sure I think you probably have this from many, many people, the biggest, the most intense memory was when we named it.
Yes.
We were all at a dinner party, and I don't remember where it was. Mary Ann Lundy was there, and, you know, there were probably 10 of us around the table, and we were trying to figure out what we were going to call this thing. And we came up with Jimmy Jean and various words, but the scribe put the wrong name, put the wrong spelling of what we were saying on the whiteboard, and it turned out to be Reimagining, and we lifted that and said, oh, what do you think about that? And so we talked a lot about that and decided that it was the Holy Spirit moving us along, and here it was Reimagining, and that's what it became.
I love it. That is great.
And then another one, I was part of the steering committee as we struggled with a logo, and eventually the logo became a box with flames, except that they weren't red necessarily, but flames coming out of this box. Basically, you know, we had been in a box, and pretty soon the box had an opening and everything, you know, poured out. New ideas, new concepts, etc.
And I think I might know, but what did the flame represent?
Well, the flame was, it wasn't a flame because it wasn't red.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But what was coming out of the box was all of this dodgy old the stodgy old beliefs that didn't work for us anymore. Everything that was male, you know, nothing female. But here was this box with the open top, and all of this coming forth, new ideas, not locked up into a box anymore.
Yes.
So we put that on letterhead, and we put it on T-shirts, and we put it on cups. We put it all over.
Mm-hmm. And Judy, I'm wondering if you remember, it sounds like there was an evolution process to become kind of this theological colloquium, and it kind of grew. Do you remember about how that process happened?
I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
Oh, sure.
It seemed like are you there?
I am there, sorry.
It seems like that the initial participants were always there.
Okay.
I don't think we added a whole lot. We might have added Randy later on.
Randy Nelson?
Randy Nelson, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Manley was there at the beginning. I was there at the beginning. Just a lot of people were there at the beginning. I also left after I got married.
Mm-hmm.
And I got married the end of May in 93. And so I left. I don't know if anybody else left, but I was there through most of it except for the very end of it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, looking at the minutes, it looked like there were different ideas. They were going to celebrate the ecumenical decade, but it looked like they weren't clear about what exactly you were going to do, and then it evolved into the global theological colloquium.
That's true. I've written about this. We thought initially that we would invite women theologians along with a few hundred others who would dialogue with each other about issues that were important to women. this was a good idea, but the funding was in doubt, and so we couldn't do that. But after a while, Mary Ann somehow got the funding straightened out with the Presbyterian Church, and we got the funding, and we decided that we would try to have this big, big gathering. We kept saying, I think we'll invite the whole world. We said that many times. I think we'll invite the whole world.
Oh.
Basically, we said in the form of the speakers, because they were from the whole world.
Yes. The other really interesting thing about this reimagining was that it wasn't just a regular conference where you invited in speakers. And I'm just wondering if you recall about the worship and the art and how that developed, because that was so amazing that it involved more than just speakers.
Right, right. The worship was phenomenal. Mm. And I credit Suicide Martin. Mm. You know, she is also deceased, but she was extraordinarily creative musician and artist, I guess. And she would come to the meetings with all of this. You know, she created new songs. You know, they got us into trouble too, the songs did. She created new songs. She created new liturgy. It was extraordinary. I had never been to anything that was quite as creative as that.
Well, I think that brings us to your experience at the 93 conference now gathering. Now, you mentioned you moved away and then came back for the gathering. And I'm just curious what your experience was like at that gathering that you had helped to plan.
Oh, well, I remember walking in the door and tears. I mean, I have to tell you that even talking about it, I get a little weepy about this. I stood in the general area of the Minneapolis auditorium, and thought, my gosh, we did it. It was overwhelming, and many of us thought that as we walked into the gathering with all of these 1,000 women and 83 men. It was an overwhelming experience, and then when we were all in the big room. 2,000 of us in this big room, that was pretty overwhelming, too.
That is so moving to hear you say that. So powerful after all these years, and it was for so many people.
Yes, it was. It freed up so many of us. You know, I was preaching regularly, and, you know, many of us were, and this conference freed us up in many ways, although all of the backlash that was happening also put a damper on us considerably, especially those of us who were not in the Twin Cities. And I'm very aware that my experience in Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, which is a very, very conservative area, was very much different than the experience of my steering committee friends in the Twin Cities. The presbytery that I was in Western Pennsylvania, which is Beaver Butler Presbytery, they voted to condemn the conference at the same time that the presbytery of the Twin Cities area was voting to affirm it.
Yes.
So, I mean, we were all called heretics in Pennsylvania about this. And so our, you know, the experience was very much different, I think, depending on where you were.
Mm-hmm. Which is why it's important to get your story. Also, you wouldn't have had the same kind of support as people would have had in the Twin Cities, right?
True. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to hear so much about this. I did want to just ask, when you said it freed us up, I just wonder if you could say a little bit more about that.
Well, I think it freed us up eventually.
Yeah.
To be more, the conference freed us up eventually, or at least I'll speak for myself. I I really did cower in a corner for a few weeks in Pennsylvania. I was afraid I was going to lose my job. I was afraid I was going to be convicted of heresy. It was everywhere I went, and if they spoke about Reimagine, it was quote unquote that awful conference. So I was not in a place that where reimagining was supported or affirmed in any way, shape, or form. John was busy in that too. But eventually, I could, you know, after a year went by, say, and because I was still preaching regularly, my thing would take the form of more justice, feminist issues. I was thinking about this whole thing. Do you remember the whole business about the Clarence Thomas and Nita Hill?
Oh, yes.
That happened for reimagining. And I preached on that in terms of justice issue. But because of you know, text that I could use to deal with something like that, I became more free to use a text to talk about justice issues than I would have been if reimagining had not happened. I mean, that part of that the flames or the streamers coming out of the box. I mean, we were not in the box anymore. Thank goodness.
Yes. I have to ask, that is so fascinating. Do you remember what you said about the Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas thing? What biblical? That's fascinating.
I probably have the sermon somewhere, but I don't remember. I do remember I was just aghast at the whole thing.
Yes. Yes. Well, I was wondering, you know, I do know that it affected you directly, the backlash, and you've already started talking some about that, but could you say more about how you were affected directly by it, especially given your context?
Let me see. How do I say this? I can read you some of what I've written about this.
That would be great.
One of the things that just, I didn't understand it. Are you a Presbyterian?
No, United Methodist, actually.
Okay, the Presbyterian Church is a church of the Reformation. And our motto is Reformed, always reforming. And in our service of ordination and the installation of elders, deacons, and ministers, there is a sentence that is asked of every single person. Will you seek to serve the people with energy, intelligence, and here's the word, imagination, and love? But just these words from our book of order, the word imagine, imagination, and reimagining, stung many people's faith and ignited a firestorm of words, condemnation, threats of charges of heresy, threats of withdrawal of funds, hate mail, and loss of jobs. That word is in our ordination.
Yes.
Imagination.
Yes.
And yet, third, reimagining for our conference just blew everything wide open. And the threats and the condemnation came from the religious right, conservative and fundamental men, and a few women. Yeah. And we were in John was in Pittsburgh Presbytery, and I was in Butler, Pennsylvania, which is, you know, close together. There's stronghold of conservative theology. And missed any new possibilities for the interpretation of Scripture. Let me see, what else can I say about this? Because I'd been on the steering committee and part of that very supportive group of men and women, when I left and after the backlash started, I felt very alone in Pittsburgh, and I needed the other members of the steering committee, and I had not made friends yet in Pittsburgh. So I didn't have friends to talk about this with. I was shocked over the hysteria over the caucus. Even though I was in, you know, conservative Western Pennsylvania, I was still shocked about it. Invoking the feminine for God was just out of people's realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
John and I were consumed daily by what the negative press was saying about reimagining. And every night we would compare notes about what people were saying about us and the concerts. And I wrote in my journal at the time that in order to survive, I had to be someone I was not. In order to survive with the put down of women, my mouth was taped shut, my hands tied behind me, and my feet were shackled. That's what it felt like.
Mm.
It was horrid. And then Marianne Lundy was also being harangued. And you have interviewed her, have you not?
I have, yes.
Good. She was harangued and verbally attacked by those who had decided that reimagining was heresy. And she was interviewed by Jed Koppel, and you know that probably.
Mm-hmm.
Another, when I was voted into the Presbytery of Beaver Butler, which is a requirement in our denomination in order to work in a church, nobody asked me about the conference. I mean, there's a questioning time, and nobody asked me about the conference. But a woman got up to make a report about the Presbyterian women, and she said, and I quote, this is a quote, like it or not, what they say about the reimagining conference is true. And the woman was getting her information from the layman, Presbyterian layman, which is a conservative newspaper. It's not connected with the church. You know, it's a addendum here. But it's very inflammatory.
Mm.
And what was interesting, too, that she did not go to the reimagining conference. Mm. She realistically knew absolutely nothing about it. And here she was, you know, criticizing it.
Mm.
I finally came to my senses and thought, I cannot cower any longer.
Mm.
When people would ask me to talk about it, I did. And I spoke at another large presbytery meeting in the middle of the state. And they wanted me to discuss the issues of reimagining, and I did. And one person came up to me and said later that she was concerned about her daughter and what would happen if she had questioned the leadership of her church about the issues of reimagining. She wouldn't be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was so much criticism about it.
Mm-hmm.
At another press meeting, there were more negative comments about Marianne Lundy. And a Presbytery member stood up and said that Marianne Lundy was out to destroy the church. And I quote that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the Imagining Conference, I was prepared to stand up and counter that statement, but instead, the Reverend Ken Hall, he's a former moderator of the General Assembly, and he's a member of that presbytery. He stood up and said that he had a different theology from Marianne Lundy, but he respected her and her theology and her faith stance, and she was not out to destroy the church, and that kind of accusation was just not appropriate on the floor of presbytery. And he sat down.
Mm-hmm.
And no more said.
Mm.
So, able to counter that. Another thing, I had a governing body called the session
mm-hmm.
during that time. And every church has a session
mm.
in our denomination. And I put together a package of information supporting the conference and then what the layman was saying. And the conference, the session, really didn't understand a lot of it. I was afraid that the mindset would be uppity female and that I would really be raked over the coals. But I eventually it turned out that my ministry there was a very positive ministry, despite the fact that reimagining had taken place and that I was a part of it. What else do I want to say about this? The issue of inclusive language was such a big deal there at the Reimagining Conference. I can remember there was one point, all of the women who were members of the Church of the Brethren, they stood up and got up on the dais and decided that they were not going to be members of the Church of the Brethren anymore. They were going to rename that church.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what. Everybody just hooted and hollered about that, because it was so to see these few women, there are probably only six or eight of them, they decided of being Church of the Brethren. I do have to say that the creative theology that came out of Reimagining was just stunning. It was just, it was such a freeing for all of us, I think. And this is what I also tried to impress upon John Buchanan. We had had dinner together. I mean, he must have come to Pittsburgh Presbytery. And so John and I were invited to a dinner party. And I ended up sitting beside him. And so we began to talk about reimagining. And I told him of my involvement in it and of what it meant to me and a whole lot of other women. And then he went on to General Assembly, and he was part of this task force that reviewed it, and I believe eventually came out and they affirmed it. But boy, it was. I'll end with what about my husband John. While I was dealing with the hysteria at the small church level, John was dealing with the fallout and the backlash at the executive level. He was under fire for just having gone to the conference. Generally, he was well-liked in the presbytery, but now a small group of disgruntled pastors within his own presbytery were out to make waves for him and cast him in a negative light. Because of this conference, the small group wanted to fire him, even though his personnel evaluation was very high, was very good. The stress that he was under was enormous, as was I. Eventually, we decided that he would not be a victim and he would resign. And so he did. He resigned from the presbytery. My statement after his resignation was that if he had not resigned from his job, he probably would be dead soon. And so in hindsight, his choosing to leave that position was a good decision for us, and we moved on with our lives. But it's interesting, too, that we both struggled with physical issues. We've been married only for a year, and the upheaval and the stress of the time was immense. John had intense back spasms for several weeks. I had a stroke in my eye because of high blood pressure that just was higher than a kite, and it was triggered all the stress on me. It was amazing that our marriage hung together during all of this time, and we're still together and very happy.
Yes.
But it was awful.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's enough of the backlash.
Oh, well, Judy, that was really important, and thank you for that. I did want to ask you one other thing about, in your essay, you wrote about how you also went to the clergy women in the presbytery, but you weren't supported by them.
I went to a lunch gathering, and one woman said, "Oh, now something about we're really going to find out what happened." But there was no support for me at that gathering. And as I remember it, the women of Beaver Butler Presbytery were afraid of anything I said might rub off on them, I think, that I come from a different mindset. I was a progressive feminist theologian. They were stuck in Beaver Butler Presbytery, and they could not be free themselves, and so they did not talk to me. They didn't. It was awful.
Mm-hmm.
However, my clerk of session was a former Salvation Army person. And she was so supportive, and so she understood what I was saying. She went with me to several of these gatherings where I was asked to speak. So, you know, I took her with me because I knew she was supportive.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't say any. I knew she was supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very interesting situation because here she was. She used to be part of Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And actually, that brings me to the question, given everything that you and John were facing, how did you get through this? That was one place you got support. How else did you manage to get through this?
Oh, well, we talked a lot. I mean, we were both going through it.
Yes.
You know, they were after him. There would be things in the paper about John Clem, executive presbyter, and his wife, the Reverend Judith Strauss Clement, who was on the steering committee of reimagining, da-da-da-da-da. So the key was that we were both going through it.
Yes.
We exercised a lot during that time. I mean, we still do.
Mm.
But we were really doing a lot of exercising. We prayed together. We just talked endlessly about this until we finally got through it. I think the fact that we did not stay in Pittsburgh, John had basically had enough of it.
Mm.
And although we didn't talk about this openly, he started, to look a little bit for another job and, not really, but just keep his options open. The fact that he did resign rather than take all of the guff that was being hurled at him, that was good for him and me and us, that we weren't victims anymore. We were in charge. We decided that we've had enough of this.
Where did he go from there? What position did he go to from there?
He went to Carlisle Presbytery as an interim executive.
Uh-huh.
And from there, he went, after Carlisle Presbytery, we came to Blackhawk Presbytery, which is northern Illinois, and he had an extraordinarily successful job there. We were there for, 5 or 6 years?
Mm.
And that in Milwaukee and Geneva, Illinois, and Wilmette, Illinois. But he had a very successful, he was the executive presbytery for Blackhawk Presbytery.
Mm. I'm glad to hear that. Judy, how do you account for this backlash?
Grow up with maybe conservative notions, conservative theology.
Mm-hmm.
They've never been around anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They've not been encouraged to question anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if you did question, you were a heretic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to accept what was said, whether you liked it or not, or agreed with it or not, or if you had, you were not able to offer any other possibilities or suggestions. You know, you asked originally for the my definition.
Yes. Yes, please.
My definition. I said a theological convocation by women for women and men held in Minneapolis in November of 93. This event gave women and men the courage to think new thoughts and discuss them, as well as voicing thoughts that had long been in their hearts and minds, but perhaps never voiced. This was a convocation where all of us looked through different and or new lenses, which revealed new understandings regarding scripture and belief. Mm-hmm. We imagine was a life-giving, history-making event, a watershed for the Presbyterian Church and other Christian denominations.
That's great. That is great.
John has always said, we put on new lenses, new glasses, and we have never looked out of these new glasses before. And we saw and heard some new things. And it was important to talk about them.
That's a good image. Before we move on, I did want to ask about, you were at the 1994 General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church, and reimagining was a big issue there. So I just wanted to know if you have any recollections from that assembly and from the report that was finally issued there.
I remember that we were on, let me see. I did not speak at the assembly, but John did. My husband did. And I only had about 90 seconds. There were so many people who wanted to speak. But John had, you know, better credentials than I did. He was the executive for Pittsburgh. So he got up and he spoke to it. I remember sitting and being in prayer the whole time as I sat there and listened to the haranguing again and listened to people who were supporting it and praying that my conversation with John Buchanan would recall that and he would understand how important this whole conference was to so many women and a few men. I can remember I was just on pins and needles about what in the world was going to happen. And we were so relieved when Fort came out. I think they affirmed the conference. You know, they didn't deny it. But we were so relieved when it happened.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you about now, almost 25 years later, what, when you look back on it, what aspects of reimagining were most significant to you and why?
One of them was how important inclusive language was. And when I, you know, back in seminary, I made inclusive language a big deal for myself. And vowed that I would use inclusive language in preaching and in my churches and in my liturgies, and I did that. And I didn't tell my congregations that I was doing it. I just did it, and I figured they probably wouldn't know any difference, and it wouldn't occur to them that that's what I was doing. I think it's, anyway.
And I assume that there wasn't a reaction against it. You didn't experience that. And just to be clear, you were probably using God. You weren't using, were you using feminine language or not using?
I was trying to be neutral.
Yes.
I was trying to be neutral.
Right, yep.
I think what reimagining did for me, it certainly fired me up again. to be creative and it fired me up about my faith and what my faith meant to me. When I was in Butler, Pennsylvania, I could hardly believe this. When I got there, Now, Butler, Pennsylvania is Western Pennsylvania, and that was the church that I was in when reimagining everything blew up. But there was a woman there who had four little children. And when I got there, she stood in the background and watched me as I shook hands with all, you know, people that I met, et cetera. And she finally came and introduced herself with her four kids hanging on her. Well, eventually she just kept talking with me and talking and talking and talking. Came to my house and she was interested in my library, and so she read some of the books, and pretty soon, what do you know, she decided she would go back to college. So she went back to Westminster College and got her degree, and in the meantime, she took her four children to Northern Ireland, and they spent a year there. She just wanted to have an overseas experience, and her husband was a principal and could afford to send her, so she went. Wow. And then after that, she said, okay, I think I'm going to go to Pittsburgh Seminary. And I thought, oh, gosh. But she did that, too. And she is now an ordained clergy person in Beaver Butler Presbytery, which is, you know, a very conservative place. And she's not. And she's also been the moderator there.
Wow.
So, wow is right. So you think about reimagining certainly changed her. I mean, she didn't know that the effects of reimagining from me through her was immense. Was just immense. Imagining was, you know, something of new ideas. It was inspiring. It gave new possibilities for us. There were more women in pulpits, I think, because of reimagining. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And for Connie to have done all this, and then, you know, a few years later, I went back and I was part of her ordination. Oh, so.
Wow.
Yep.
That is great.
It was quite.
So how did your involvement in reimagining change your perspective on feminist theology or the church, would you say?
It just increased it. It was, you know, I was very open to it anyway, mm-hmm. to explicit language particularly, mm-hmm. And to hear about Lady Whitson, you know, Sophia, and to hear about that, because I didn't know anything about that, mm-hmm. and I didn't know about Robert's text about mm-hmm. Sophia and, you know, standing on the street corner, and, you know, that was really important to me, mm-hmm. and although Sophia is a it's hard to understand, and certainly need more instruction and more ideas about that, about her. But reimagining also gave us, you know, so many of us new ideas of how to incorporate a text, how to interpret a text, use insights into scripture. Another thing that reimagining did, I think younger women, as a result of reimagining, went back to church because they had new ideas and they could counter all of this male hierarchical stuff. They could counter that, and there were more clergy women. I think the seminary that I went to, the year that I was there was the first, I mean, I started in 1982, mm-hmm. graduated in 80, but when I started, that was the first year that the women were 50% student body. Mm-hmm. But United Seminary in the Twin Cities is one of the, I mean, that was unusual for a seminary to have that many women, but we did.
Yeah.
What else? Let me see. More women in the church, more women in leadership, new insights. I mean, in the churches that I went to, I think none of them have had a female as the senior pastor or the head of staff.
Wow.
until I got there.
Yeah.
I mean, the church in Wilmette. Now, I don't know if you know what Wilmette is, the North Shore of Chicago.
Yes.
Very, very affluent.
Yes.
And I went in. It's about a 450-member church. And I was the head of staff, senior pastor. Mm-hmm. So I was preaching all the time. I did have an associate. But when I left, there was a big party for me. And there was a woman who came, an old woman who came walking across the dining room floor to come to the microphone. And I thought, oh, I wonder what's going to happen here. So what she did say was, I was one of those women who didn't want a female, who did not want Judy as our pastor. But I can tell you that if any, whoever we get is as half as good as she is, I'll be satisfied.
Oh, so, wow.
Because of reimagining, you know, women were more accepted. I mean, there were, I think we had a lot of difficulty because of that backlash. Mm. But eventually, there were younger women. There were more women in churches, mm-hmm. leadership. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting sort of progression,
mm.
which started out. Sadly, with the backlash,
mm.
but, you know, we
could. I missed the last part of it. Sad, the backlash, and then what was the end of that?
Well, I mean, the backlash was pretty bad, you know, at the beginning.
Yes.
But after we got through that, the results of reimagining and the leadership of women that happened, and more women in the pulpit and more women in other kinds of leadership. I mean, it really did help us in terms of the women who were preaching and teaching in churches, mm-hmm. and the acceptance of.
Mm-hmm. That is great. I wanted to ask one follow-up question about something you said. That was all great. You mentioned something about Sophia and how language can be somewhat difficult. Could you say a word about that? What makes it somewhat difficult?
I don't know why it is. I mean, I've got the book She Who Is.
Yes.
And it's about Sophia. And mm-hmm. I think that particular text is a really hard one. Let me see here. I can't say a lot about that.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. You've said a lot of good things. I know you've talked about many of the legacy of the Reimagining Conference and community. Do you think, what is the greatest legacy of it?
Probably is more women in church leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Inclusive mm-hmm. language.
Yes.
Looking at text from new perspectives.
Yes.
I think that's probably.
Yeah. Do you think that inclusive language is being used in churches today, Presbyterian churches?
Oh, we belong to a UCC church here in Seattle, and they're very strong on inclusive language.
Yes.
So it's, I think the more progressive churches are, they're very tuned into inclusive language. But now, you know, there are other churches that are not. I mean, Seattle Presbytery. Well, I will tell you this when the tape is off.
Sure, that's fine. We can have that conversation later. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yes. So what does reimagining mean today? And by that, I don't just mean reimagining in terms of the conference, but what needs to be reimagined today in the church?
I think continuing where we left off before. Yeah. It's not a perfect world.
Mm.
It's a perfect presbytery. It's not a perfect other other denominations. I mean, we still have our issues. I mean, there's a whole lot of, you know, racial stuff. Gay and lesbian, transgender people are still not welcomed in most churches. And I think my denomination is one of those. It's not as good as inclusive with gay and lesbian people. The UCC church where we are now is very, very inclusive.
Mm.
It's just being to me what it can be. And that's why we're here in this particular church. Mm. What else would I say about that? I guess I don't have anything more to say about that.
Well, that's great. That is really good. I have one last very specific question. And that is, we're developing a reimagining website, and it's going to be both archival, collecting materials, but also hopefully collecting resources for today for people to use. And we're looking for ideas about what should be included in it, how to let people know about it. Any ideas you have would be really helpful.
Realized that reimagining was not going to last forever.
Yes.
We couldn't keep it going forever.
Right.
Because it was such an inspiration for us, you know, for a number of years, but, you know, it finally did go by the wayside in terms of being on the website, on a website.
Yeah.
So what it needs now, I don't know. You know, it needs money.
Yes. True.
It needs money. That's always a big thing. As broad as you could make it, you know, being careful not to limit it in terms of just mainline denominations, because mainline denominations, you know, are struggling.
Mm. So when you say it's broad, would you mean broad in terms of Christianity, broad in terms of interfaith? What are you thinking?
Both.
Okay.
Both.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have mainline denominations here in Seattle, but we've got some offshoots here that are really large churches. And my guess is that the inclusive language is not pronounced in some of those churches.
Right.
And how you get that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's a toughie.
Yeah.
You know, people writing, I suppose, some feminist, known feminist preachers, I would think some of what they have written would be helpful on a website.
Yeah. And it's fine if you can't think of anyone specific. Is there anyone particular you're thinking of?
No. I haven't really thought of that.
Sure.
I haven't really
thought. That's fine. Well, Judy, this has been incredibly helpful. Is there anything we haven't discussed that you would like to add?
Williams.
A little bit. Say some more about it. Tell me.
Dolores Williams was one of the speakers for Reimagining, and she kept saying, you know, I want to talk about what Jesus lived for, not what Jesus died for. And then she talked about all the blood and guts that were hanging on the cross or something like that. And the whole Reimagining just erupted with hoots and hollers and agreement with her. She's an African-American professor, I think, or was at that time at a seminary.
Yeah.
But for her to say that was just incredibly real, you know, for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Were you at that workshop, that session?
That was part of Reimagining. I mean, yes. That was part. She was one of the speakers.
Yes, yes.
The Maine Reimagining Conference in 93.
Right.
And when she said that. And boy, she got a lot of flack from that.
Yes, she did. Yep. Is there anything else? That was helpful, too.
Niles' name.
Yeah. And we're still recording now.
Yeah, okay. I don't think so.
Okay.
I think I've said a lot already.
You did, and it was wonderful. Thank you. I'm going to turn off the recording now, if that's okay with you.
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Great. Thank you.